Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Cool. Yeah. All right, we're good. Take it, baby.
You're cool? You've never been cool. Yeah, you call yourself cool.
It's true. I've never been cool.
Yeah, we're cool, dude. I don't think so. I think you're on the edge. I think you're on the verge of going Broken Arrow at any moment.
Wait a minute. What does cool mean to you?
Well, the way you, it's all contextual.
No. What does cool mean to you, Pete?
What? No, it just like various swear words from George Carlin's Seven Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television. It's all in the delivery and the context, the tone. You said, I'm cool or we're cool. That means I'm okay. Things are going swimmingly. That's it. Swimmingly. To use the old school.
Let me ask you something, though. Is Fonzie cool?
Back in the 70s, he was. Today, we just see him as campy. And I'll tell you, that's one of my pet peeves. We look at some, you know, music, art, television show, and we watched it when, you know, decades ago. And now we say, oh, well, that's silly. We don't do that. And let's take an example, Happy Days and Fonzie. One of the most popular TV shows during that time. Right,
a cultural
phenomenon.
Point.
Right, I'm sure it's in the Smithsonian somewhere. Right, isn't Fonzie's jacket is in the Smithsonian?
No, well, I have to look that up.
Yeah, look that up because Henry Winkler showed up, and every once in a while, I saw him on a talk show. He just shows up and like stands near it and sees if people recognize him. And goes, "Hey, that's Fonzie." And good for him. Yeah, I think that's great.
Ooh.
Uh-oh, it was removed from
Fonzie's jacket.
Was there
from
a
the
scandal? Uh-oh.
It was switched out with Farrah Fawcett's bathing suit.
Okay, same thing. Every boy going through puberty at the time, like myself, had that poster.
The Smithsonian does have
of her
a pop
in
culture section.
Red tank suit.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah, because it's not a bikini.
Fonzie's jacket is in the Smithsonian.
But it's just being rotated out.
So what's
the
thing that bothers you about the looking back? Because when you say that, I start thinking about my
reaction to Star Wars these days.
Yeah,
so Star Wars, same thing. But you loved it when you watched it.
I know
so
that it was
a
fundamental. I will not.
You will indeed. I'll shut it for you, pal.
It was a fundamental part of my youth. It was a fundamental part of I mean, Jedi is probably the closest to religious that I ever was.
Wow. Do we have churches on that? Do we have the power of the Force?
I have never verified this, but I have heard stories that Jedi is a recognized religion in Britain, that you can put it on. And Britain might not be the right way to say that. What is the correct way to identify?
The United Kingdom?
The United Kingdom is the way to identify that country now?
I'm guessing.
So the United Kingdom, Jedi is an acceptable...
The limeys across the pond.
That's what I'm going to go with.
And I say with great affection for my friends over across the pond.
Those colonial bastards. Jedi is an accepted checkmark on the what religion are you for?
That's tough. The United States Department of Defense has...
That's an unverifiable factor.
...has some issues with that. That, you know, when you're buried in Arlington National Cemetery, having, you know, given your life for your country, which is a great honor, and I think you can pick your religion. And so you'll see a lot of crosses. So anything that's Christian, you get a cross. You can have a Star of David, so if you're Jewish... But I think there was a big hoo-ha.
So you picked this religion previous to your death, I assume.
Well, no. I mean, probably a loved one can check a box somewhere. And they were – I don't know if it actually went through. I think it might have. You can now choose Wiccan.
Yeah.
Or at least they were struggling to get them to choose Wiccan. And Wiccan, I'm thinking it's like a star and a crescent moon or something like that. Or it's a crescent moon.
Well, crescent moon's also Islamic.
Islamic, right.
Or South Carolina for some reason.
I don't know.
You know that sticker with the tree and the
moon? Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. The palmetto tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they like to fly the Confederate battle flag on their government buildings.
So, South Carolina
which
is
the source of some contention.
A jackpot of symbolism.
Mm-hmm. And a gold mine of comedy, too, if you think about it.
So you don't like that people think that Happy Days is campy now?
No. Oh, no. It is kind of campy. And so is the Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island and stupid stuff I watched back then. But so you can call it campy now, but don't act like you didn't watch it. Don't act like, okay, yeah, it's kind of campy by today's standards, but I watched it, and I used to laugh at Marsh and Greg Brady and, you know, Gilligan and the Skipper. And
I will not give up my reassessment of Star Wars.
That's okay. You're entitled to your opinion.
I am. It was it was too much. It was just too much to look at it and discover, oh, God, it's so awful. It's a terrible movie. It's a most of the acting is awful. It was written badly. And as George Lucas sort of reclaimed Star Wars
right.
in the early 2000s, he revealed that nothing about that movie was nothing good about that movie was his fault.
Wait, run that by me. Nothing good about that movie.
The three Star Wars movies, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith.
Right, before the prequels.
No, they are the prequels.
Is that what you...
Yeah.
Okay, they're... no. Oh, okay, the new ones, yeah.
The three prequels. Sequels yeah. that happened before the movies that they are sequels to.
Right, as opposed to Episode 4, 5, and 6.
That's right. Which is a retroactive naming convention. Episodes 4, 5, and 6. I just want to point that out, too.
Okay, can I use some graph theory with vertices to describe this properly?
Stay out of it,
somebody
Pete.
Get me a pencil.
So, Lucas made three awful movies, and he had enough money and enough
to make three more
status.
Awful movies?
No. I'm saying the three awful movies he made were The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. And he had enough money and status to make exactly the movie he wanted to make. No one would have told him. And, in fact... one of the producers.
He could have written a check for the production.
Exactly.
Costs.
One of the producers said something along the lines of, maybe we should have been more careful with the production. But anyway, George Lucas made the movies exactly like he wanted to make them, and they were terrible. They were beyond terrible because they took the blood of a good thing. They took the Star Wars that we knew that had formed us. You know,
so you're saying the first three that were made were good. The last three were bad.
No, the first three are pretty bad too. But the best one is
Welcome
Empire
to
Strikes
I Hate
Back.
George Lucas Day.
Listen, this is important, and I know that it's a laughable conceit nowadays for okay. Lucas's films to be important to someone, you know, on a existential level. But Star Wars. Which was amazing for its own reasons. You know, I think one of them just being like he nailed the whole Joseph Campbell thing. And Luke is a young man who knows that he's destined for greatness, and it turns out that, you know, his history is...
Lost in a coming-of-age film.
A little bit. A little bit. And, you know, Princess Leia's hot, and Han Solo is a rapscallion, and...
Rapscallion,
Chewbacca
I like that.
Is just Snuffleupagus with a gun.
And I'm going to steal that one.
That's yours.
I mean, I got a gig next week. I'm going to be like Snuffleupagus with a gun.
It was just, I mean, it was magnificent in every way. And, you know, the dad, Obi-Wan, dad dies but is still there. And
yeah.
like all these things. The movie itself, craftsman-wise,
yeah,
pretty bad.
You know? Are we talking about the original
yeah,
ones?
Yeah, we're talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, but at the time...
At the time...
It was state of the art.
No. I don't mean special effects. I mean, like, put a movie together.
Uh-huh.
Get the performances. Like, I mean, just... I can't do an impression of Luke Skywalker, but just imagine... Uncle Owen! What about that one? I mean, like, the whole movie is that high-pitched, just kind of get it out, let's get going. There's a story that... Harrison Ford actually slammed George Lucas against a wall and said, "You tell me how to say these stupid goddamn words."
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So, the movie is still magnificent in my memory. It's still this amazing thing that happened. It still mm-hmm. transformed how I thought about the world.
Right.
Despite it being bad.
Oh, but so that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it can have a
and
profound
then,
effect, despite
absolutely.
The fact it's not
it
the greatest thing
since sliced
bread. It had a
profound effect, despite its flaws of craft. And then Empire Strikes Back was an even better movie. Someone else directed it, and someone else wrote it.
Who did Empire Strikes Back?
Erwin Winkler.
Oh, okay.
No.
Wasn't Steven Spielberg involved in
No, Irvin Kershner.
Films? Okay.
And then Lawrence Kasdan wrote the script off of a Lee Brackett draft.
Okay.
And then Return of the Jedi, Richard Marquand directed that,
mm-hmm.
and it was written again by Lawrence Kasdan off of somebody else's story. And Lucas had influence. He told people what he wanted, and then they did those movies. But Empire Strikes Back was the best movie, and Return of the Jedi was the second best movie, and Star Wars was the worst movie when it came to the filmmaking.
Right.
You know? And Return of the Jedi is probably the worst movie for... sort of sappy, difficult, unintelligible or inaccurate psychological realism. Star Wars is probably the best movie for just getting in someone's soul, and Empire Strikes Back is the best movie of the
three. Well, you've thought about this a lot.
No shit, I have.
Okay.
So then Phantom Menace comes out. Can't wait to see it. Go to see it. And it is horrible. I mean, the movie was so bad in the framework of we're going to watch another Star Wars movie mm-hmm. that people were using, and by people, I mean comedians, were using
the Gungan dialect to make fun of
no,
it.
No, they were using metaphors of like sexual assault.
Oh, know, really?
To describe. Yeah. I mean, people were overly upset. Uh-huh. I mean, people were even maybe a little bit insane in their reactions to this movie.
In the negative, you mean?
In the negative, yeah. Okay. Because it undid what had happened before. It undid the magic.
Okay.
Right? It was, and the last three movies, they were all George Lucas. Written, directed, oh, okay. George Lucas all the way. So okay. George Lucas is a terrible filmmaker. It's clear.
He's a better filmmaker than I am.
I don't know if that's true.
I will declare that now.
You haven't made a movie.
It is hard to make movies.
Lucas will never not have made The Phantom Menace. That I mean, that's his curse.
Right, but you know, I've been involved in the making of short, you know, 5-10 minute screen tests. It's hard. I've been involved in the making of, you know, television programs, you know, just like The Adventure.
Has one of your 5-minute screen tests made someone hate
cry
a piece of their childhood?
I actually have one of mine. I'll show it to you. We'll see.
And we'll see if it reaches back and destroys
things.
I hate
my life. It's all Pete's fault. Okay.
Okay. So,
did you want to talk about something constructive today?
Yeah, we'll just cut out all the Star Wars stuff.
That's the best part of the program. Charlie Bennett hates George Lucas.
This past weekend, and I know I've already talked about this enough. So this past weekend, I went to that camp. And by past weekend, today is April 2nd.
Yeah.
So
that camp as opposed to Fat Camp, which he's going to next month.
I should go to Fat Camp.
We should all go to Fat Camp.
That camp is the Humanities and Technology Camp. It's an open, I'm reading from the website, it's an open, inexpensive meeting where humanists and technologists of all skill levels learn and build together in sessions proposed on the spot.
So it's sort of impromptu.
It is impromptu, except, I mean, it's planned that we're all going to be in the same place and that we're going to create a session for or a set of sessions for the camp. So
but when your facilitator goes, let's do some shots, that's extemporaneous.
It was almost that. it was like 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
It was organized by a librarian and a PhD candidate over at GSU. It was
Georgia State University, for those of you listening, in the hinterland.
I don't know. I feel like maybe it would be inappropriate for me to start tossing names out, but it's up there. You can find these people if you go to that camp.
Apparently George Lucas was there.
Yeah, George
Lucas. And Charlie assaulted him.
Jason Puckett and Valerie Robin were the organizers, and I thank them very much. They got the rooms, and they bought T-shirts and some snacks and provided the structure. And so then this group of people, after coffee and bagels on Saturday morning, took an hour to go through a bunch of session proposals. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, what are we going to do for the next 2 days? And we voted on what we liked and you know, the sessions that were more had more appeal to everyone rather than maybe a smaller group. Make right. sure that those weren't next to each other.
So the first hour was actually choosing
yeah,
the sessions.
Yeah, sorting, deciding where they're going to go. And it was in the organization, there was a moment when someone, and this was me, someone could say, hey, if at all possible, could we switch that session with that session so I can attend both? You know,
wow.
And
so like, they accommodated you because you hate George Lucas so much?
That's right. You know, and that's actually on your badge, whether you hate George Lucas or not. No, I just said it.
Like, do you need a vegetarian lunch? Do you hate George Lucas?
It didn't bother anybody. It wasn't a problem. So okay. they switched it because cool. it was like a Google Doc up on mm-hmm. on a digital projector is how they scheduled things. So let me see if I can grab the schedule there and
Wow, so this sounds really cool.
It was super
and,
cool.
And what were some of the sessions, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't mind you asking at all. So one that I did was called Small Audio Dynamite, which is big audio dynamite joke. And the point was, by the end of the session, we would have a podcast planned that we could go out and start recording right then.
Did you actually do it at the session?
We recorded a promo, and we had the general plan laid out. So, in fact, let me see if one of the things that you do in a That Camp session is you open up a Google Doc and everybody kind of adds to it. So let me see if I can.
So has That Camp been around for a while?
5 years.
Oh, I just saw that one, Mookifying Faculty Development.
Yeah, so this is one of the proposals, Mookifying Faculty Development by David Morgan over at Emory. This one, Nicole Tilford, Multiplayer Game Classroom, Humanities Style. She was talking about how to add a game element to a lecture class. Brendan Collins talking about democratizing maps. Pete Rorabaugh, following a C change, that's C as in the letter C, C is for cookie, connectivism in the classroom, MOOCs, Andrew Boisio, who is a Britain fellow here, Digital Spaces. This is another one that I put up there, Tangible and Eccentric Scholarly Communication. A quick session of just standing up and doing 2 minutes on things. Anyway, so, you know, you can put in your proposals a little earlier. You can do them on the day. Let's see if I can bring
this
up this.
This is where I speak for all the conservative elements in Georgia society and said, what are we doing this for? What is your problem?
That's a good thing to talk about. So let me see if I can pull up the session calendar and we can take a look.
I mean, this just sounds like a bunch of liberal academics yammering on for a day.
Well, I mean, what do you do at a conference?
I yammer on a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes the best ideas come from that sort of spontaneous. Actually, Lou and I are going down to do a workshop for the Applied Improvisation Network in Texas later this year. And obviously, a lot of it will be improvised.
The That Camp structure almost reveals how on the fly most everything we do, you know, in a conference is. Like, you can spend a lot of time putting together a very careful presentation, and that's a good thing. I'm not saying, oh, we shouldn't ever structure our presentations.
Very often those kinds of conferences do not breed new, interesting ideas.
Right. They're kind of boring. They can be a transmission of information. Yeah. And in fact, if someone was delivering, you know, very very thorough data on how people did things, I got nothing. I don't want to make something up because I'm not trashing this in any way. I'm not saying this is bad, but it is a little boring, and I remember.
Yeah, it's a little boring.
Yeah, I remember getting lectured in high school. You know, here's all the details. Here's the data. Here's, you know, all that. And, or here are the data.
It's plural, ladies
and
gentlemen.
If you're a pedant. So, Saturday, Mookifying Faculty Development, Democratizing
Maps. Wait, what's the
maps?
One called Dork Shorts?
Dork Shorts is like 2 minute. Stand up and talk.
Oh, you know, I thought it was short. Like Bermuda style pants for dorks.
I'm sure that's what they want you to think. Teaching computers, what we need to learn, like teaching, not teaching computers, but programming languages. No, that's a different one. I'm all mixed up.
I love this multiplayer game classroom thing. Can you give me an example? Because I'm an engineer.
Went to Google Plus Communities. I didn't go to multiplayer game classroom. But you can go here and
see the results?
Where is...
Do they take notes?
Gaming the classroom? Would that be the one you want to see? Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
So here you go. Here are the notes for... Like, look, it's practically an open source conference. Mm-hmm. Notes from that session are here that may or may not remind you of what you did or spark something for someone who didn't go to the session.
And basically, you can put this whole thing together for the cost of finding some space, which you can sometimes get for free at universities.
Exactly.
And places like that. And, you know,
I threw
some
in 20
snacks.
Bucks. Everybody threw in 20 bucks who could afford it to, you know, defray the cost of bagels.
So it's a sliding scale registration.
I mean, not even sliding scale. It's just like a donation would be great. Can you give us 20 bucks?
Okay.
And since
I like
it usually costs me $250 to go to a
conferences.
Conference.
I mean, they can be $400, $500, $700 for these things.
So you get those proposals going, people make up a schedule, I had a lot of luck with my small Audio Dynamite session. I was really pleased with it. People seemed engaged.
Please explain, what is Audio Dynamite as opposed to Audio TNT?
So Big Audio Dynamite was Mick Jones's project after The Clash, and there might have been one in between.
Is that like a burger I can get at Crystal now? What? Big Audio...
Zing!
Please explain.
It's awesome.
I don't know what this is. You act like I know what this is. What is this?
Big Audio Dynamite is a band.
Oh.
Oh. Mick Jones was a member of The Clash.
Okay, you know, I remember band. The Clash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mick Jones did Big Audio Dynamite after.
Okay.
They had a song that you'd recognize.
And it's called Help Me, I Have a Hemorrhoid?
I can't remember what the name of it was. It was the...
Hence the name, Big Audio Dynamite.
It was the hit...
When hemorrhoid meets, like,
it
really
was the, you know,
da-da,
greasy
around
the food. World, something, something.
Okay.
I don't know. What
okay,
was
so you've got some artistic-y, music-y, people-y.
Rush for a Change of Atmosphere, I think it was.
Okay.
Ding, 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 so, ding, ding.
I mean, you make the incorrect assumption that I actually get out and experience culture and arts.
You have on occasion.
I do on occasion, but normally I'm curled up in the fetal position in my house going, I wish I had more time to sleep.
So Big Audio Dynamite is a band. That's all you really okay. need to know.
And, so
and
what
I
is your
mine small audio dynamite as a joke for Big Audio Dynamite.
Okay.
So we had a group of 10 people,
mm-hmm.
and we did a brainstorming session very quickly. Right. What's a thing, what's a topic you want to talk about? Okay. How are we going to talk about that? What would be a way to record a podcast or do a radio
Ooh,
show.
So you're talking about a schema by which one can generate and record informative podcasts.
Yeah. The outcome I wanted was for people to feel like, wow, in an hour we had a plan on how to start a podcast series. Mm-hmm. So if I took a week or I took a couple weeks with some people, it would be
even better.
Even better.
Yeah.
Right? And that you could get over the hump of how would I start a radio you know, series. And just to add a few, like to toss out a few of the things that I've kind of pulled into, by osmosis, I've learned a few things about radio production.
How much caffeine did you have this morning? Tell the truth now.
Not a lot.
You're on it. You're in it. You're in the moment.
This was a good thing.
This is really cool.
Being among my peers and also my not peers who, like, I am not a PhD candidate in any sort of communication, right? So, I wouldn't call...
Were that the peers? Was that the peers?
That was what a few people were. Okay. And I would never say that they are my academic peers in the sense that I'm not doing the same kind of work and mm-hmm. I'm blown away by the minds, right? There was a programmer there who was not... I mean, I don't have programming knowledge at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in a way, these folks were not my peers, but they were also my peers in that we were concerned about the same things. We were at the that camp. And networking is mm-hmm. a very sad way to describe what happened here. I was rejuvenated. I was given an influx.
So this is like networking square
intellectual energy.
They pulled you from the pit of academic despair and lifted you up to the light of day.
I've not been all that confident about my job performance or my ability to succeed even in the larger. Right. Framework of my profession,
because you struggle at the interface. Your job description, just like Amit's and many of your colleagues in the library here at Georgia Tech, is ill-defined because the library is evolving, it's changing, and you are working at the interface of the old library and the new.
Thank you, Pete.
New this fall from CBS, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That was lovely.
That sounds like a trailer.
Also, we make jokes about how at the end of the description it says other duties as necessary, and that's like where hell is. That's the opening to a pit.
Well, but it's heaven and hell. It's the opportunity to do amazing new things and evolve.
I don't believe in dichotomies, Pete. Keep it to yourself.
This from the man who wrote on my birthday card yesterday, happy birthday, you big dummy.
Happy birthday.
I saw that.
Did you have a good birthday?
I did.
Did it make you smile when you said you
it
big
did.
Dummy?
When I said big read. Dummy. Who wrote this derogatory comment? And then I saw your signature.
Yeah.
And then I believe Nirmal picked out the card and it had an expletive in it.
It did. It did.
and it made me laugh because the Institute Communications here considers Nick Selby's tagline badass and expletive. And we have an entire generation of high school and college students just laughing their bad asses off over that. We did last week on Friday, We did a comedy show for the first robotics competition, the regional version of which was held here in Atlanta. It was very exciting. A lot of kids making robots. So the nice lady who hired us, Lou and I got up there. We were the first guys going on because we had another gig later in the evening. And
are you okay? Are you dying?
No, I'm good.
Too bad.
I'm just trying to process some breakfast. But, you know, I think we might have used the word crap once.
And now you're on notice?
Well, she was just very concerned. Some parents walked up to her, and she goes, I don't know. You're on the edge. And Lou goes, that's what we want to be.
It was a good conference because it really was simply structure placed on a social gathering.
Okay.
You know, and the looseness.
To find new, interesting things.
Yeah. I mean, people, Pete Rohrabaugh, who was actually a Britain fellow here and who I met a long time ago and liked a lot, and then he went off to pursue his dream.
What was his dream?
Well, to teach, and I mean, he just went to a place that treated him better. Or actually, no, he went to a couple different places. Mm-hmm. But it was great to see Pete again, and I was in his session about essentially using Google Plus as a teaching tool, as part of your class, the way you communicate with your class.
That's a real neat idea.
It was great.
Because we make a lot of things, and now Google Docs are out there.
I had never really understood Google Plus to begin with.
Good, you'll have to explain it to me because I don't use it that much.
Well, you just kind of got to get in there and do some things. It doesn't have the frame that Facebook has, where mm-hmm. it's like, oh, here's a timeline, and so.
Oh, that's better because you have more opportunity to be.
And that was the thing that I saw during Pete's session is that you direct the activity on Google Plus.
Oh, okay.
And just having he had a plan. But he ended up, by the end of the session, he's like, well, I spent a lot more time on that than I expected. But it was good. It was what that group talked about.
Right. Huh? That you just evolve into talking about what you need to talk about, what you want to talk about.
What that group,
okay,
collectively. Because, like, if it was different people in there, the session would have gone differently. You know?
But what was, okay, so it's, what's the acronym again?
That camp.
Right.
The
so that's
the Humanities and Technology Camp.
So this is something that is at the interface between science
Absolutely.
And technology. So science and humanities. You've got technology, and this very likely in our day and age means computer technology.
Yeah.
And
a lot of discussion of
so humanities
the
are,
digital
are
humanities.
Using computers and digital phenomenon and software to teach better, to explore the humanities better, to teach people the humanities better, that sort of thing?
Yeah, totally. In fact, let me read a little more from the...
It's an unconference.
It is.
Which hasn't been used since the UnCola in, what was it, the late 60s?
An unconference is to a conference what a seminar is to a lecture, what a party at your house is to a church wedding, what a pickup game of Ultimate Frisbee is to an NBA game, what a jam band is to a symphony orchestra. It's more informal and more participatory. To get the most out of that camp, have fun, be productive, and stay collegial. Don't bring a presentation unless you're teaching a workshop. Propose a session and take charge of running it. Talk, make, teach, play. Listen, help take notes. Sign up for Dork Shorts. If a session isn't useful to you or for you, go to another one. That's the law of 2 feet. You got 2 feet. Use them. Bring a laptop, not a tablet. Dress comfortably. Consider volunteering. I don't know why it's bring a laptop, not a tablet.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
Dress comfortably.
Seems a little constraining.
Consider volunteering to teach something. Keep a record of the experience. Don't forget to fill out an evaluation. Ooh, I got to go do that. It was good stuff. You can go to southeast2014.thatcamp.org and see what went on at my particular That Camp, or you can just go to thatcamp.org and get yourself some information. It was super cool, and I'm very pleased that I did it, and it was a nice reminder that there's...
But what came out of this? Was this on a weekend?
Yeah, it was a Saturday.
Okay, so we can't dock your pay for this sort of thing.
I'm taking some time off and using the time I spent at the
Well, but
the, that
the,
camp.
The point is, though, this if I worked in the library, I believe this is professional development.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that MOOCifying of professional development.
I connected with folks at other universities. Mm-hmm. I got my skill set out there. And if a couple people have said, you know, hey, we need to talk about you helping these people do this other thing. Yeah, it was great.
So here's my threshold. My threshold for any seminar, unconference, regular conference, whatever it is did I walk away with, you know, one or more interesting ideas?
Oh, absolutely.
Because Lou and I on Sunday actually taught an innovation seminar using improvisational humor at the Southeastern meeting of the American Society of Engineering Educations in lovely Macon, Georgia. And
down by the prison?
There's a prison down there?
Is there not?
Well, there's Mercer University. That's where we were. It was a much more collegial environment than the prison. It's a lovely campus. But there were a bunch of ideas, but my favorite one was we were actually doing a brainstorming session on how to improve interaction online for students in education.
Nice.
And two ideas floated to the top. One came from me, one came from another guy in the audience. And it was basically that if you're trying to get students to interact online or do things like choose lab groups or project groups, you should treat it like online dating. That's an interesting metaphor because it's very similar. You're trying to find a meeting of the minds, a similar, you know, attitudes.
Hearing how someone else
thinks. That was a good idea, and I'm going to steal that one.
Yeah, hearing how someone else thinks of something that you do, it helps you. I mean, you'll find out very quickly whether your idea, your metaphor, mm-hmm. can withstand criticism or not, and it's a really good thing.
I also learned from a guy on Monday. I was at some talks on Monday, and he was talking about inverting the classroom, flipping the classroom, mm-hmm. where you'll put videos online.
Well, do you want to flip it or invert it? Because those are different things.
Actually, he claims flipping and inverting are the same thing.
Only when you're using Photoshop. I don't know if that's true. I was just going.
Well, we can explore that in a moment. But what he said was, because I raised my hand and I said, "Well, so I have similar observations to you that I find my students all the information's in the chapter or in a written note that I posted, but they like to see it go step by step with your voice as you go through things."
Yeah,
and you're right. Sometimes I give them little gems of, oh, be careful here, because if you do the wrong thing, your eigenvectors will be crap. But he goes, no, you have an additional sense. You have the visual. You have the auditory. It's a narrative. Of course they like that better. And actually, I learned from talking to my class, not everyone does, but the majority of people do. So it was very interesting to see one person's opinion, why my students say they like the little narrative videos better.
Something about that camp, it was a perfect representation of if you go into a conversation or a presentation or sort of a moment of communication, uh-huh. hoping for a lot of information
right.
to pass back and forth, you'll mm-hmm. probably be disappointed.
Right, right.
But if you go in hoping that, you know, success is, excuse me, success is one thing.
Yeah.
Staying with me.
Yeah. And hopefully it's one or two useful ideas that you can use.
But if you go in like that, you will succeed. You will get what you want and probably much more.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. And I'm almost sorry that I'm back here with you because it just sort of ruins everything.
I am often a big disappointment. But what you're saying is actually what Lou and I did on Sunday was very similar. I mean, we taught this session on using improvisation. There are no assumptions in improvisation. We did several workshops. We tackled three different problems after we sort of explained the details and taught our group a little bit of improvisation techniques. And they You don't have any expectations. And in fact, a few really interesting ideas came out of it. So, and you felt great. You felt invigorated. We felt pretty good after that.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is this unconference, that camp, took humanities and technology people put
it's
them
together.
It's
not that camp. It's that camp.
It's that camp.
The humanities and technology camp.
As opposed to the fat camp, PHAT, which is... people in the humanities and technology.
You're so happy about that.
I am. But
all right, bring it in for a landing, Pete.
Yeah, what you're saying is this is an entire conference, not just the session, that is improvised in some way, shape, or form.
A little bit, yeah.
And it works because you get to explore things you otherwise might not have. And apparently, based on what you're saying, you lower your expectations, and therefore, you meet your expectations.
That is what I said, isn't it? That was a bad lesson. This is Consilience with Pete and Charlie, a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
The unity of knowledge. I always like to say that part.
You can find us on Facebook. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. And you can always get in touch with me or Pete if you look on Twitter and other social media.
And can you also find us on Tumblr at peteandcharlie.tumblr.com.
Thank you.